It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT, and I'm joined now by Washington Times political editor Stephen Dynan. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
John Boehner digging in early on the debt ceiling issue, huh?
Yeah, definitely laying down a marker. Here we are, at least 6 months, if not more, before we actually would have the next real debt crisis, which would, bumping up against the debt limit. But Boehner trying to get out ahead of this issue early, saying, basically laying out his marker for any new debt increase will have to be accompanied by equivalent spending cuts, exactly like he did last time. The key goal he's going for here is, last time around, this turned into an issue of Republicans being accused of trying to shut down the government over getting their way.
Right.
This time around, Boehner is saying, look, no, we're telling you up front, here are the rules of the game. When you come seeking a debt limit increase, and we as Republicans want a debt limit increase, when you come seeking it, here's what you're going to have to produce, is more savings equivalent to the debt increase. And so, he's benefited here by the fact that these are the rules that he required last time. Now, of course, last time's deal wasn't necessarily very ironclad, and it'll be complicated by the fact that here in November and December, Republicans will be trying to undo the automatic cuts kicked in by last time's debt deal, even as they're proclaiming, well, we really mean it this time in the future. This time we really want real cuts to go along with any debt increase.
This time we really, really mean it.
That's essentially what they're going to be saying, and that's why they're going to be hurt by the fact they're going to be trying to undo the defense cuts that they set in motion through the last deal and by failing to agree with the whole super committee last year.
All right, so Boehner draws a line in the sand. How does the Obama administration react to that?
Their reaction was exactly what it was last time, which is no conditions. We should allow the debt to increase. It's essentially their argument that we've already incurred this debt. This is paying for the bills that we've already incurred, and so why would you put our debt, our bond rating and whatnot at risk by attaching conditions to it? And, if you remember last time around, 2 or 3 days after the debt deal was signed last time around, Standard & Poor's came and actually downgraded American bond rating, the federal bond rating, from AAA to AA+. And so there are consequences to pushing this to where everybody thinks default is a real option. And that's what the Obama administration is saying, is no, we aren't going to have any preconditions like that. Working against them, of course, is the fact that the last time they accepted those preconditions. And, on the floor, I believe it was the Senate floor, after that last deal, Mitch McConnell came out and said, we've just made history. Never again will there be another debt increase that's not accompanied by substantial spending cuts. And I think he's probably right. There will be something attached to this next one. The question is whether Boehner wins and it's really a dollar for dollar, and whether that dollar for dollar really means anything.
Yeah, well, I saw where Treasury Secretary Geithner said, let's do it this time without the drama.
That's exactly right. That is essentially the position of by drama he means don't attach conditions, and that's, we'll see. I think there will be conditions, but their stance is essentially the exact opposite of Boehner. Boehner is saying, yes, we will do it, but we absolutely should basically take a pound of flesh for that, and the Obama administration is saying, no, just do it. Don't bother with a pound of flesh.
All right, now what's this we're hearing, that they have so much on the table that the thought is they're pretty much done for the year calendar-wise? They've got enough on their plate already?
Yeah, and so much on their plate, they're not going to get to it all. So, in the House, take the House, for example. The House has done one of its 12 annual appropriations bills, which means 11 more to go. They only have between now and July 4th, which sounds like a lot of time, sounds like almost 2 months, a month and a half, they actually only have about 8 or 9 full business days scheduled. And you sort of need, in order to do appropriations bills the way the Republicans have been doing them, which is under an open rule, which means anybody can offer amendments, that requires several days of work per bill. The last bill, the first one they did, it took 3 days to get through all the amendments and whatnot. So if you figure 3 days per the 11 going forward, that would be 33 days needed in order to do this. They've only got 9 scheduled. In addition to this week, they're doing Violence Against Women Act reauthorization and the defense bill. The defense policy bill, not even the defense spending bill. They're going to have to go through some jobs issues and jobs bills they want to do. There are other things on the table. They're just not going to have time to do all of these spending bills the way that they say they want to do them.
Okay. I want to turn your attention to another story you were working on. DREAM Act supporters target filibuster. Illegal students and some House Democrats have filed suit.
Yeah, so some illegal immigrant students who would be benefited by the DREAM Act if it were to go through, and some health Democrats, exactly that, filed suit in court here in Washington, D.C., federal court in Washington, D.C., saying that they believe that we should that the filibuster is unconstitutional because it sets a bar that is not in the Constitution. It sets essentially a bar above a majority vote for passage of legislation, and are challenging. The DREAM Act students say they have standing because if it weren't for that bar, they would have essentially gotten legal status by now through the bill passing the Senate. And the members of the Democratic members of the House argue that their votes are diminished relative to the Senate when the Senate has the 60-vote requirement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. They just want the simple majority. I understand House Democrats suing, illegal suing to change Senate rules. I don't know how that happens, and I know that that probably does not set well with the majority of the American people.
Yeah, I think that second statement is probably very true, judging by the emails and whatnot that I got yesterday.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's, you know, people say, well, the reaction I got from a number of folks was, so their parents broke the rules to bring them here, and now they want to change the legislative rules that have been in effect for 100 years in order to get their way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, their answer, several of the DREAM Act students, the three plaintiffs, spoke at a press conference yesterday, and their answer to this was, well, it's unfair. We put a lot of effort into winning this legislative process, winning the legislative battle, and we feel, you know, we didn't win, and that's unfair, which is an interesting sentiment, and I understand it, but that's, you know, all the filibuster rule, or technically it's a cloture rule, all the filibuster is it's a Senate rule. The Senate originally was a place of extended debate. You could talk an issue to death. It wasn't until the early 1900s that they finally decided, well, we need some way to cut off this extended debate and actually get stuff done. We don't want to entirely remove the debate privileges we have, so we'll come up with this cloture rule. So you can actually cut off a filibuster by getting a certain number of votes. Initially, it was two-thirds of everybody voting. Back in the 1970s, they changed it to the 60-vote threshold, three-fifths of all senators duly chosen and sworn, and that's where it's been since then. So this is not an actual bill passage sort of situation. This is a debate situation, and the courts have always been really deferential to Congress in writing its rules for debate.
Hey, correct me if I'm wrong. Haven't some Democrats in the Senate blocked passage of the DREAM Act in the past?
Oh, sure. This time around, I mean, the particular time that these three students are talking about, the last vote was in December 2010, the last big lame duck session we had. And at that point, you actually had the five Democrats joining with most
okay.
Republicans in voting for a filibuster. And, you know, Democrats, of course, have used the filibuster when they were in the minority. Republicans use it now. They're in the minority. It's absolutely a tool that both parties rely on, and so which is why, you know, for what it's worth, you didn't see any Senate Democrats joining in this lawsuit. Not that some of them don't agree with that the filibuster should go away, but the party leadership all agrees that the filibuster is a valuable tool.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I see where that great Georgia Democrat Hank Johnson, the guy who thought Guam would capsize.
That's right. He was part of this as well, absolutely.
He spoke out. What did he have to say, though?
Oh, he essentially said what the student said. He said it was unfair,
okay.
That it dilutes his vote as a member of the House, and that it's not fair, that it's a relic of an old age and needs to go away.
I got you. All right, so is the court going to take the case?
It's a really good question. The Supreme Court has never actually, no case like this has ever actually reached the Supreme Court where it's ruled on the merits, and the legal experts I spoke with seem to think courts generally don't want to get involved in internal workings of the other of Congress, of the two houses of Congress, because that's, first of all, you have separation of powers issues, and second of all, you have just the debate privileges that the Constitution actually gives to both chambers of Congress. So there have been a few instances where the court has come in, and basically, for example, in one instance, the House had tried to not seat a member that it had previously expelled from his chamber, but who had been reelected into a new Congress, and the court came and said, no, you can go through and expel the guy again, but you can't refuse to seat him if he's been duly chosen by the people of that district, regardless of your previous expulsion. Each Congress is a new Congress, and so they actually did tell the House how it could run its affairs in that limited case. But by and large, for issues of debate, they're likely to leave the Senate alone.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll wait and see what happens. Thank you, as always, Stephen. Have a good day.
Always my pleasure.
Stephen Dynan, Washington Times political editor, 4:57, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT.